the DL debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's Kitchen, and there's free admission entertainment every weekend.
It's Monday evening at 7 p.m. It's time for the DL debate.
Check this.
Welcome one and all to the famous Mountaintop Studios here, highlandradio.com, beaming out live. This is the DL Debate. Thanks for tuning in or streaming or downloading or whatever you may be at. We've got a packed show coming up for you tonight, featuring none other than Con O'Donnell, Damien Lawler, Big Neil Gallagher, but of course regular contributor John Harn is with me here in studio. John, how's things?
Very best, Brevin. Good evening to all the listeners.
You had a good weekend? You weren't blown away?
Oh, well, a bit of controversy between McCool Park and O'Donnell Park for the under-20 game, but we got over that, a bit of spat on Twitter, so jumped the gun a wee bit, having a go at the McCool's boys, a bit of crack, but...
It wouldn't be like you having a Twitter spat, that's...
No, it wouldn't be like it, but Storm Dennis got the better of everyone, he ruled the roost, so that was the end of that.
Yes, yes, and we fixed for Saturday, our under-20s with Monaghan, bit of a clash with the senior game.
Yeah, 1 o'clock in Balbafabran, so, you know, it's not... You know, a lot of people were looking forward to getting to Croke Park maybe for the night, the way up to Dublin to see the boys in Croke Park next Saturday. I'll be up there myself. We're going up for a few days with the family, so unfortunately I won't be in Balbafay on Saturday. So, you know, I think maybe they could have played it maybe a Friday night in Balbafay on the lights, but listen, boys in college, one thing and another, there'll be all sorts of excuses, but, you know, it's a championship game. I think boys probably wouldn't mind getting out for the night, you know.
Yeah, time of year, I suppose you can get lucky with this competition and it can go against you, and I suppose lately it just seems to be storm after storm. And what about Dublin, Saturday night? Are you going up the road?
Oh, I'm going up. I've gone up for a few days, so looking forward to taking the boys to Croke Park. They were there last year for the Kerry game, the Super 8s, but no, it's great. But, you know, everyone knows the Dubs, and my two boys love the Dubs, so they'll be looking forward to seeing the Dubs live in action in Croke Park. So hopefully there'll be a good crowd there, but you can't beat Croke Park playing on the lights, and hopefully there'll be 20,000-25,000 and there'll be a bit of an atmosphere.
It's great for the wee. That's a couple of nights in Dublin. You've set a couple of grand aside of you.
Yeah. Definitely not. They're doing it on the cheap.
Well, listen, talking about having a couple of grand on his side, my next guest is well paid and rightly so, Damien Lawler, one of the top hosts and pundits around the country. He's said to come on today to break down a lot of things. I want to hear his take on the GAA in general, but particularly on the rules and these new rules and how people are trying to get around them. And of course, money, 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 all this cash is rolling in as well. So, as I say, delighted to be joined on the line by Damien. How are you, sir?
I'm not paid enough, Brendan, to be honest.
It seems to be a common theme out there, Damien. I think maybe it could ruin us, say, if we had too much. That seems to be the way it is. Say you're better off there.
I wouldn't mind experiencing that feeling. I give you a definitive answer after that.
Just to see what it's like. We know what it's like, them big Sky TV. You know us, we boys in the radio are earning very little, you know. But
yeah, well, listen. Sky TV is great, but Sky TV is 4 to 5 months per year.
And, right.
Yeah, you know, look, you know the crack. It's there's none of us going to get, we're not going to be driving Lamborghinis at the end of September in this business.
It's awful the love of it, eh?
A lot of it is, to be honest. That's where I got into it, and interviewing you about 20 years, Brendan, and people like you made my job easy when I started out, to be honest, because you're always friendly and approachable. And I would say a lot of the guys are still the same these days, but you don't always get to find out. And there's a protective veil around the players now. The access is pretty slim, but that's the one thing I love about my job in terms of on big match days, as you've seen, Brendan. I've worked with you at Air Sport as well, and you're actually on the pitch with these guys, and you can get to talk to them. They're lovely, down-to-earth guys once you can actually get over to them and actually talk to them. But we're definitely losing something promotional-wise when they're not let express themselves half the time. You know, that's the truth of it.
I totally agree. It was funny, I was just talking to John about getting on guests and that in the coming weeks, and as much as we'd love to hear from players, they're a bit afraid to talk, and they don't want to talk, and if they do talk, they're not allowed to kind of open up, which kind of makes it hard to get anything meaningful from them.
Yeah, I suggest to you to go down the division, maybe from Division 2 downwards. You've got great stories down there, and lads more likely to talk. It's the same way when the hurling kicks off, Brendan, or in the season and championship. I mean, Joe McDonagh Cup downwards, unbelievable stories there. And it's going to be very interesting because I'm on your podcast today, or Seth and John, to chat about, say, the rule changes, among other things. And the two-tier championship is one of those. And, I mean, if anybody in Croke Park is spearheading this campaign, they're going to have to open up that competition to the media in terms of access and stories. And guys who maybe would have gone to Boston or New York to play for Donegal over there that stuck around to play for their county in a championship that has to prove itself. And they're going to have to sell that competition. So I'm fairly hopeful that access will be improved a bit down the divisions. But it's not going to change Lee McCarthy or
I think a big part of that, Damien, is taking away the fear of saying something. I think, and that comes from the management and that, really. I mean, we have this huge blanket hanging over, don't give the opposition any, or don't give anything away, or say nothing about what we're doing. And as we've closed rank, then nobody gets to hear anything. And, you know, you even hear stories of people in their own families. If you have a brother plays for the county, he won't even tell you. So that closed shop thing, I suppose, is a big issue, Damien, as you just said, along with the rules that have come in there. I'm just wondering, in terms of, you know, the sin bin, the issues we have, you know, with timing against that and people trying to get around them.
Yeah.
You know, obviously we've got like the different outline of the rules across the board. As you see them now, Damien, what are you making of the new rules and how people are trying to get around them?
Well, so Brendan, I suppose bottom line, the four key ones straight away, you've got a 2-tier championship coming in and you can see the battle in Division 2 straight away to get out of that mud pass that might slide you down to the 2-tier championship. There's 2 points separating top and bottom there. I mean, there's absolutely crazy results going on there between Lee Sharman and Roscommon, just for an example. They're all beating each other and beating each other by 6 or 7 points. And it's absolutely fascinating and incredible to watch. So 2-tier championship might not be everybody's cup of tea, but it's after illuminating Division 2 and it's after putting a rocket up Division 3 as well. So that's the first thing I'd say about that. There is a way out of that 2-tier championship if you can make your provincial final. And for example, Tipperary footballers play Clare in the semi-final. Their league form is patchy enough. Drew 1, won 1, lost 1. They're playing Cork next weekend. That's not going to be an easy game. So they might have to hope that they beat Clare in the semi-final in Munster to get to the final. That's where they lie there. As regards the GAA mark, I've seen your own man, Michael Murphy, in the first game taking a mark at his ease, just kind of rambling out and catching the ball in his belly. And don't think the mark was brought in for that at all, to be honest with you. So that's kind of up in the air for me. It's brought in to maybe solve a problem in Gaelic football, John and Brendan, that maybe is no longer there. I think the game has started to evolve and teams are starting to pull out a little bit more. That mark was brought in to try and encourage attacking play. And we saw with Matty Donnelly and Colin McShane last year, it actually worked wonders for them to such an extent that they, to a large extent, they continued that tactic long into the summer. The passing to midfield, then a long diagonal ball into McShane, who'd stretch out into the corner, do a loop and over the bar. It worked great for them. So I wouldn't be in favour of myself. I can see why they brought it in, but I don't think that issue is there any longer. The sin bin, they're trying to bring it to hurling now, Brendan. I wouldn't agree with that either. And I suppose, look, if I'm being honest about it, I think football does need it. Hurling is cynical as well, don't get me wrong, but player gets a black card in football now, they go off the field for 10 minutes. No sub is allowed. That reduces the side numbers for that period. And a second black card or a black following a yellow results in a red, and the player goes off then for the rest of the match. And the one thing you've seen with a sin bin is when the opposition are down a man, when the team is down a man, the opposition can cut loose. Yeah. And they're my thoughts. And as regards the kick-out rules, you're trying to avoid all the short kick-outs. And there's actually a motion ahead of this year's Congress coming up whereby a person catching the ball from a kick-out can't pass backwards. And if I'm being completely honest with you guys, I'm actually struggling to keep up with all of it. I really am.
Jimmy, that's one of the reasons we bought you out. Yeah, all kick-outs from the 20-metre line and no one within 13 metres is allowed to catch it. There's another wee one sneaked in there. A lot of things, I wasn't even that aware of. And as I was saying before, particularly with, as you said, the sin bin and the timing, you know, people obviously now running down the clock. That clock will get added on at the end of the half or whenever, when that player's back on. And with the mark as well, Damien, the marks, it's all accidental. You know, people are picking up marks, as you said, catching maybe in their stomach, and it's only because a pass is played a certain way. And then, as well as it, I mean, just around the big teams there, you mentioned like the Callum Machine and Michael Murphy and it. The players, the elite teams have players who have the ability to make use of that mark. A lot of other teams haven't got those type of players in their ranks.
Agree with you. To pick up on those points then, lads, you mentioned the added on time as well, Brendan. And you look at the time that was added on into Dublin Monaghan versus Meath versus Mayo. You know, they're incomparable. Obviously, different games now, but there seems to be a little bit of an issue rearing its head there. Now, I've been involved with as probably you know, you met myself and Mikey McGean last year in Donegal at the Donegal, what game was it, Brendan? Donegal Meath game, the Super 8 game, and Michael McGeehan is now coaching with Tipperary seniors. I was with the Tip under 17s and under 20s, and I would say that even at, with all these rule changes that are coming in, it struggles to even get a game plan around it, because I'm involved this year with my club minors. We're from a hurling part of Tipperary, but we're playing football call off yesterday, so we're out this weekend, and the manager was texting me saying, you know, are all kickouts from the 20-metre line? And do you still need a kicking tee because yes. It says kicked off the ground? And I told him, I think you do, you know. But the truth of the matter is you're constantly referencing the Croke Park website. And my ultimate point here is whatever rules that we've discussed already, and as you say, you've got players at the elite level to lead with it, it's going to be carnage at club level, I think, officials trying to keep up with all this.
And in fact, you David Goff with his fancy three interface watch, you know, talking the last day about
everything
that he has to do there. That just seems so much for me, John. You know, and I was just thinking, you know, Pat McEnany came out then and said that keepers coming up to hit free kicks, etc., that shouldn't be time stopped. But Goff says that they haven't.
So straight away that there's confusion amongst Pat was with the top referee in his time, and David. It's probably the top referee now, and even you know Pat's probably on committees and all that there, and
he's still
they can't make. I thought it was Willie Baird, Tipperary man. I have to correct the
they've
V here.
They've given some kind of rule.
But like if Pat McEnany and David Goff are arguing over the rules, well then you know what, as you say, Damien, what hope is the ordinary club referee?
Well, John, before the National League started, like there was a kind of a media briefing just 3 or 4 days around, just 3 or 4 days ahead of that, and that came as a result of a lack of clarity on certain issues. And the referees have said straight away that the mark was the one that they were really struggling with, because in terms of where the ball was kicked from or where it was landing, and the immediate decision then, and the player takes 4 steps or does he stop, and then the defender is free to dislodge the ball from the opposition if the player does take the steps and stop. So it's all over the place. But I think I had the privilege is the word, because I learned a huge amount. For last year's All-Ireland final and the replay, Croke Park came out with an independent earpiece. So I usually have my producer in the earpiece, and he's, you know, feeding me information the whole way through or asking me to get information. But on the other ear this time, I put in the Croke Park earpiece, and I had access to both Conor Lane and David Goff for the respective finals. And Brendan, you put your finger on it. What they have to contend with on a big match day is unmerciful. And even in terms of the opposition, Muir Ferna coming in off the sideline on the opposition kick-out to fill the space, to deal with medics who are trying to get in to attend to an injured player, to deal with the sideline officials to maybe keep them posted in terms of time, to deal with selectors, to deal with, I suppose there's forces everywhere. They're their own lines people as well. They're constantly being fed information. And I really came out of those two games with huge admiration for what they do. Because I thought I knew a fair bit about it, but I had my eyes open completely when I heard, say, there's 7 or 8 stakeholders that they had to deal with. And, you're frantically putting up maybe 10 to 11 kilometres at speed as well, trying to keep up with those players. And it's not like the Premier League where you can maybe mostly pitch up around the centre circle area and maybe go into the opposition D every so often. It's constantly up and down the field.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Fascinating insight there. You actually could hear that. And listen, we'll not mention the Premier League. We don't want any VAR coming in. But you know, speaking about money at the start there, Damien, just about the 30 million gets thrown out, you know, it seems like it's a huge figure. And then whenever it's broken down then across the board, you're kind of like, is it such a huge figure? You know, when you think about groups of players, like in counties like Donegal, having to travel long distances, going away to play games, you know, there's so much happening around there. And then, of course, you've got the counterbalance of what's achieved out of the economy around us. There's a lot of people employed by this and people that benefit from it as well. So it's not as if this money's been thrown away. It does gain its own money then through economy and people's wages, etc. So I was just wondering what your take is on this thing about...
My take is fairly simple. Teams start training in October, November. It's too early, in my opinion. And particularly when it's not like the old days when the league would start in October and you take a break and you come back then after Christmas, players might come back out of shape. That's not the case anymore. So I'd condense the season, Brendan, to be honest with you, and I'd compact it a bit more. I'd get rid of all the pre-season competitions. The other thing I do as well is maybe put a cap on the amount of training sessions you can have for a week, because in my opinion, 2 to 3 sessions a week is fine, but like, I mean, players are out 4 and 5 times, and we had a situation there in Tipperary this year where 10 of our players were up in Dublin, and in fairness to David Power, the manager, he let Paddy Christie coach those players up there. Paddy's a coach and selector. Mayo had 21 players in Dublin at one stage as well, and I mean, you know, they had to come home close to the championship, so you can imagine the amount of money that's been wrapped up there. But I think that maybe looking into it a couple of years ago, and it's probably gone up since, but €5,000 was the average hit for a training session, and that's now with the higher up counties. But you've got backroom staff and all the rest of it, so it's not easy to contend with. Most of the county boards are in good nick, to be honest about it, but they've all cut their cloth to measure. But it's a bit like the referees. What you have there is kind of good-hearted volunteer people in most cases. They're running a business, and it's a runaway train if they let it be. And now look at a county like Kildare, who had maybe the checkbook taken off them a few years ago by Croke Park. They've got themselves back in order, and they've maybe a couple of a couple of hundred thousand in the bank now, and they're looking to redevelop the stadium in Newbridge. So every county is different, but I would make the point ultimately that too much training, the season is too long, and that figure as well is not just the county senior team. The underage teams are involved in that as well, but it is mostly the senior team. So what most counties are doing now is they have a wealthy benefactor outside of the country. And as we saw with Mayo, that's not always a smooth relationship either. You're bringing outside forces, you're open to a lot.
Yeah, I would agree, Damien, with a lot of what you said, and even just touching on the Mayo thing. Like, you know, if you go to that Tim O'Leary and say, listen, Tim, give $250,000 to the county board and we'll use that money to pay coaches like the Dubs do and put them into schools and games development offices, they'll say, no, we just want to put the money into the county team. So therefore, that money's going there. The season is too long. The one way to cut it is cut the season. And as you say, don't, you know, if the county boards are all in agreement and they're told by Croke Park, listen, boys, we're not going to pay these expenses in November and December, well, then the county team's not going to train. You know, it's going to be very hard for a county manager to start getting players to come to training when they're not getting expenses. But something has to stop. I think it's getting unsustainable. And it all comes back on the clubs. We, you know, I'm the chairman of the club here now, and Larry Kenny, and, you know, it's just a constant battle trying to raise money to keep the thing going. And you get big levies from county boards, and the club senior team wants the same as the county senior team, and the club hurlers want the same as the senior footballers, and, you know, their strength and conditioning and backroom and GPSs and the whole thing. It's getting ridiculous. Like, I had a thing on last week where I'd a bit of a go with the, you know, Donegal, but you could take any county. Like, I think they stayed in Johnstown House on the Saturday night before they played Meath and Navan in a league game. Like, 15 years ago, Brendan, when we were playing for the county or whatever, like, that wasn't on the carriage. You went up. You got up at 8 o'clock, got the bus in the Mount Errigal, right, went wherever, and you stopped for your meal, and we were in Navan 2 hours before the match, and you went out in the pitch and you walked around and you got stretched and you waited. No, it's gone a bit crazy. Like, that, you know, how much does that cost? The boys on Twitter were saying that Mayo stayed in Harvey's Point on the Friday night before the Donegal game. Now, the Donegal game wasn't until 7 o'clock in Balbuffet, and they came up on the Friday night, stayed in Harvey's Point, 4/5-star hotel.
Only the best.
Only the best. Like, you know, to me, it's ridiculous.
And it's like the manager has a lot of clout now, probably too much clout, and they're driving it, a lot of this. As you say, if the training sessions in wintertime are not insured, or, you know, I mean, that's the end of that. There's nobody going to be allowed to train there. It's how you police it, and ultimately, a manager is very, 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 very powerful, and it's up to the county boards to set the parameters. And maybe what you might see happen in 10, 15 years' time, John and Brendan, is maybe the county board appoint the manager as an employee. And I don't know whether you call that professional or not. I don't think you do. But basically, if you're employing that person, well, then really you have full rein to give instructions and set parameters. But right now they don't.
Yeah, and every manager, of course, is trying to make his own way. Damien, listen, thank you so much. I know you're looking after wee ones and you're juggling all there. Listen, we're all to save carry on. You're a mighty man for coming on, Damien.
Oh,
fascinating points here. Hey, we'll get you on later on in the year. But, of course, knowing you, it'll not be until that big check I send you first. And then only joking. Listen, you're one of the true gents. I love seeing you at the games here, Damien, and I'll be talking to you. So I might see you Saturday night.
Yeah, best luck at the podcast, lads. Take it easy.
Thanks, David.
Bye-bye.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Serving food you'll love till 9pm daily in Sarah's Kitchen. And there's free admission entertainment every weekend.
Right now in the DL Debate, I'm delighted to say we're going to be joined by Con O'Donnell, a man who was honoured with the GAA Presence Award, which acknowledges outstanding commitment and long service to club and county. Con, great to have you on the line.
Thank you very much, Brendan.
Good man, Con. So a native of Dunluce, you moved to Mayville in 68 and there wasn't a lot of GAA or Irish language or culture happening at that time, Con, but you set about changing all that.
Well, I moved to Inishowen in 1968. My first touchdown was Mallon, and when I woke up and looked around me, that's right, there was absolutely no organised GAA events other than a bit of hurling around Burt, I suppose, and that was a bit of a shock to the system alone, you know. But anyway, I moved to Mayville about 3 or 4 months later. That was my headquarters, and that's, well, I moved down to Greencastle, and I've been here now since 1968, so.
Yeah, Con, and this, you're involved in the GAA club there, being founded, and its growth then, and the likes of SCOR, and promoting language and culture, etc.?
Yeah, we kind of started about 1970 with underage, and we were ploughing on then until 1976 when we had our first meeting, and we tried to get off the ground that time as a junior club, but we had to continue with underage then for another 10 years, and that time Telecom were here, and there was a lot of people, a lot of footballers about, and we played a good bit of football that summer, but we still couldn't get enough to commit to carry on. So it was 1996 then, in the meantime, when some of our own children and Jimmy Haggerty's and Joe McGady's and those ones were off around 16 years of age, we did manage to get off the ground, and we had a good lot of young ones coming through there, I suppose. A lot of work done over the previous 20 years. So we did win the Junior County Championship that year, and we won our first under-12 that year, our first under-14 county, and first under-16 county, and we were beaten in a minor Division 3. Now, that was a phenomenal year, particularly when we had won nothing ever before. So I became involved in SCOR around 1987, and I suppose we participated and did a fair bit of work there. And at board level, I was a cultural officer and Offa Gina Gaeilge there in 1996, and then again for 4 years before Fergus McGee took over. And we have done marvellous work there. Now there are approximately 33 or 34 clubs out of the 40 taking part in SCOR now. So that is progress, without a doubt.
Great stuff. Con, you know, just thinking, we had a good crack earlier. I was talking on the phone about a couple of things. You know my mum and dad, and you used to do a bit of battle up our way against an old club called Neave Baithen, you were telling me. It wasn't the nicest places to go.
We were looking back at you know, as it was in 68 compared to what it is today, and the intervening period as well. At that time there were no clubs, and then suddenly things began to appear and we got up and running. But there was a club called Neave Baithen, all right, and I suppose you were involved with that club yourself.
That's right.
And I was just saying to you about, there was a fella called Bamber there who gave us a lot of grief over the years. I don't know if he's listening now, but I'm not saying anything bad about him. He was a very good player, but he seemed to be playing underage football for about 20 years.
Yeah. we shouldn't laugh, but that was back then.
Well, that'll be typical of them Newton St. Johnstone men, but from a St. Junior's point of view, we were delighted when poor Neave Baithen folded, God love them, and there was a young man here next to me, had no club, so we decided we'd take him in 1993 to play a bit of minor for St. Junior's, and
thankfully he stuck
at it, Con, and we got him a few championships, and he went on to play for
Donegal. I know very well, he became a big name. He's still a big name.
Oh, aye. That
explains you, Con, everybody's wondering about this.
I didn't
this,
say a big head now, is it
no.
a big name?
Keep it grounded, Con, sure.
But we never found out what the proper name for this man was Bamber. So I'm still, that's still the, one of the biggest mysteries ever.
When
there was an inquiry over there, nobody ever knew who he was.
Do you know
nobody
what?
Nobody over there knew him.
It's one of those nicknames, Con, that Bamber, that's all anybody knows him at, but everybody will know Bamber, I suppose, the name stood out for you. But
yeah, but that was a mighty time, all right, and yeah. You went up to St. Johnson at your peril. And then we had Bort to contend with too, and then there was a club called Aileach.
That's right.
And they worked at underage, and then they worked a bit of adult football as well. And we had Inch for a while too, even up into the 90s there. We had Inch were there, but they folded sometime later. But we still have seven vibrant clubs in Inishowen, and we have to be thankful for that.
Mm. And Con, just going up to receive your award, what was the evening like itself? Were you, was all royalty type stuff, was it?
Not at all. It was semi-formal dress, which is a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
The last time I was there was the early 90s when Seamus de Fuitia was honoured that time. I was there as a guest, and it was formal dress. And for the soldiers working on the ground, we're not used to the dicky boys. All right, you boys in front of television and all that. But anyway, it was semi-formal, and I have to say it was an absolutely fantastic evening, and nothing was spared. We were put up in the Crow Park Hotel across the road. We were looked after very well. We had TG Carr recording the whole thing live. It went out from 7:30 to 8:30 with precision. And there were interviews at the table. There were 10 awards. There were approximately, I think, 375 guests there on the night. Micheál O'Donnell was a compere, and it was a glittering evening, and something I will remember for the rest of my life.
That's a lovely finish, Con. And John, you want to jump in?
Hi, Con, just congratulations. I didn't say congratulations, Con, on the award. And Mobile, you know, my mother's from down that way, Drong, and I know
yes.
that Mobile well, and I used to go down there in the cool camps back in the days, and you know,
yes.
great facilities down in Mobile, Con.
We have now, that is the thing, when I just said in my interview that I can go up there on a Saturday morning now and sit and watch 100 youngsters.
Aye.
And I can watch their mothers and their little children down drinking tea and coffee and having a good morning, and you know, the importance of getting people inside your gates and enjoying it. You know, and upstairs then we have ceilidh classes and we have all the other activities. And back tonight, you know, to kind of underline the typical week now for the volunteer, we have the lotto and we have child protection tonight as well. We have a ceilidh class coming up in a couple of nights, and then we have a ceilidh mór on Friday, and we have the Scor County Finals. That's a typical sort of a week for us, and
yeah.
that's what keeps us ticking.
Now that's it, Tom, or Conan, a vibrant GA club. But you know, if you look at some of the success that you know you went through that 1996,
yeah.
the early days. But if you look, Tony McLenaghan, captain, and Donegal Miners to an
yeah.
Ulster title
yeah.
from Mobile.
Yeah.
I'm sure Con, things like that there, you thought in the early days you'd
yes,
never see
indeed.
That.
Indeed. Yeah, and Danny Murphy lining up in Crow Park in the under 21
yeah.
and playing a massive role in that. Unfortunately, a penalty was missed maybe on the day, and it could have been the difference between having a title and not having a title.
Yeah, and the Hegarty girls, you know, for the
Hegarty
for the,
girls,
for the
two all stars, yeah,
brilliant
and,
stuff like.
And Aoife has an All Ireland junior medal
yeah.
from back. The other two girls have all stars and All Ireland winners as well at intermediate. And we have a fourth one there now, Tara, playing in the county setup at the moment.
You have the wee quiet Liam Skelly down there to contend with.
Oh,
well.
Liam, you wouldn't hear him behind a newspaper.
Yeah, listen, you know, people have to talk about the soldiers and the volunteers out there. There's no doubt you're one of the greats, and you know, 50 years of passion, you know, and warmth, and your ability to get on with people and make things happen and help people out, you know, has obviously led to this President's Award. And I'm just to say, on behalf of myself and John and the DL debate here, listen, delighted that you received that award.
Well,
thanks for
thank you very much. It's always a pleasure. And I just want to say that it's great to be recognised for something that you enjoy doing from day to day, and you spend your life like that. And I think I'm privileged to have been able to be part of such a great organisation and to enjoy it. And I hope to enjoy it into the future as well.
That's great. Thank you very much, Con.
Thank you, Brendan.
Take care, sir.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's Kitchen. And there's free admission entertainment every weekend.
Right, folks, now for a real high point on the show. Actually, maybe in the whole series, because we have the heavyweight, the one and only big Neil Geller is in studio. And what can we say about this man? Three senior titles, three Ulster titles, All-Ireland, National League, two All-Stars. We could go on and on here, you know. But listen, Neil, thanks very much for coming up and joining us. We wanted to not only talk about the glamour side of the game that you had, we wanted to talk about all aspects of your career. You know, there was an odd speed wobble and bumper, and just about your upbringing and what happened in them formative years, because you came kind of late to the party, you know. So, first of all, thanks very much for joining us. John had just one question or one thing he threw at me before this. He says he never got the better of me any time we played. Is that, could you true or false that for us first?
Of you?
No, of this.
Never out near the middle.
Harren was always just too quick, just, you know.
too quick
around the middle.
Listen, he was near me once because he hit me a box in the championship in the park one time, cracked me ribs, which, you know, I've forgiven him for ever since. But
2008.
He says he was going for the ball, yeah. It was a serious low blow. But Neil, listen, before we get to all the good stuff there, just growing up in the Glen, you always played football. You obviously went to St. Union's College and that, but you weren't Mr. Dominator like you are now. Things was happening as you were growing up. I mean, somebody said to me from St. Union's about you not making the team there. So was that bad management or what was it?
No, I think it was right enough. No, I like played away with Glen Swallow and that all growing up, and then St. Junan's in 95, started on there in the college and that, and I would have played the first year or two, you know. Mickey Houston was the manager and that, you know, he was playing half back or something like that, and then I was just kind of too slow and stuff like that.
Were you in near any county squads at that time, underage?
No, I wasn't rightly so, I wasn't good enough like for it, you know, and then kind of, I was on the time that won the McLaren, like that was McFadden and Cavan, and them boys were all in that squad, like, and a sub in that squad, but no, I was nowhere near the team because this wasn't good enough. But then I went to America then for a couple of summers then, and I guess it was 01 and 02, and just, I don't know, kind of filled out a wee bit over there and stuff, and just kind of
Dunkin' Donuts or
something like that. And then I just kind of, I don't know, just came back and just went up. Shawnee McAniff then was hosting on the 21 trials and that, and just kind of did all right at that, you know. And just kind of got in the squad there for 2 years, I think it was. You know, 2 and 03, I think it was. And that's kind of, like, we didn't have any success that time. Monaghan beat us 1 year, anyway. And
Was that the year McFadden took off the jersey and threw it at Shawnee? That was in Clovis in one game and on the 21 game. Then Shawnee put him back on, is that right?
That's right.
A controversy at that time.
That was up in Clonus. It was just a bad day all round now, but they had a good team that time, like Vinnie Corey and Desi Moore and Finlay and that, you know. But McFadden saw red.
I met Shawnee after that. He just went straight into the whole story, just explained his whole case, so I'd understand where he was coming from, you know. He was really upset by that at the time, but hey, you don't take off your top marksman, I suppose. That was the key. McFadden could have won it for them.
We had a good team in that, and I suppose kind of maybe there's a disappointment that we didn't win anything, was kind of maybe there, but listen.
Was that 2002?
Where
was Glenn at this time? Were you noticing like you were putting on good performances for them in midfield, kind of starting to dominate around the middle and that? Was that how you were feeling?
Well, we were, I remember coming on as a sub, I think 17, when we played Milford in the junior final in 2000, and they beat us by a point that day. With a couple of good battles in Milford down through them years and stuff, like, and would have been, I suppose, 2004 that time, you know. It was nothing that time, it's kind of the leagues, I think, you know, where you, what championship you played in. But must have got promoted that year, I think, and then playing Division 3, and then we're in the intermediate, and then we had a couple of, I think we got to semi-final in 04, and I suppose after that under-21 campaign, we had a kind of a minor team in Glen Swally, like Colin Kelly and Kieran Bonner and Sean Burke and Joe Gibbons, them kind of boys were playing on it, like, and kind of that kind of group of players came through then to help the older boys in, and then 05, then we made the breakthrough to the championship in the intermediate, and played Clohanilly. We won, actually, in 03, we won the under-21 Bs, We won it over against Neavolton over in Ardra. And then the following year, there was only, I think, maybe two or so, like Barry Cannon and Lee Collins, two boys overage. And then the following year, we got to the final and we played...
In the A's,
in O'Donnell Park. Got to the final, which was a massive thing.
Yes, I remember that.
Against St Michael's and...
Your old friend.
Danny Langan kicked four of the last, I think it was the last four points or something. Right. And they beat us by three or four and end up now. Then after that, then 05, then we won the intermediate against Clonlilly, like, which was a massive thing back then. Like, and then I suppose just started playing senior, and then with a couple of good young fellas in, like, you know, Gary McFadden, Keelan, and Matt Murphy fellow turned out all right.
Yeah, you're afraid to leave anybody out. Right? There was a great crop coming through there. You know, that's when you started to get to the noisy neighbours tagged there. Us Unions boys were looking over the shoulder thinking there were going to be trouble coming now, you know, because we realised you had a lot of good players in your ranks and you were about to be, you know, contenders, and you became more than that. You became champions.
Aye, I suppose we... Probably it was kind of nearly too early the time we played just in the final in 07. Like, we were kind of like, we probably, well, you know, you're a great team that time, and you should come off the back of losing two finals, like, so, you know, more so than Glenties this year, you know, you wouldn't have wanted to lose three, like, but it was probably even like you were way ahead of us that day. Like, I mean, you'd be
the Unions had a very good captain that year.
Yeah, he lost his captaincy the following year to a better captain. That's what
But that was still a great experience for us. And then for a couple of years, then we didn't get near it. Then in November 2010, in O'Donnell Park, and we played Denties in the semi final. I think we were 3 points up in the second half, and the two Thompsons got two late goals and actually beat us by about 4 or 5 in the end up. And I remember after that thinking that it was so far to even get back to a semi-final stage again, like, you know, never mind any further than that, like. And following year then, like, we were back, and I had a good sprinkle then of kind of older fellas, you know, that were playing, you know, that were still contributing big time, you know. And we kind of, I suppose, trained fairly hard and just kind of...
Some stalwarts there. Hey, tell me, just taking back to the start of your senior career with Donegal, I remember you coming up to Castle Finn. You had the old tricolour Glenn's Woolley jersey on you. And, like, but Donegal, you know, as John, very few men who could fetch ball, you know. You landed up, and I was looking, we were playing a bit of backs and forwards and that, and you caught a few kicks. And I was thinking, I remember saying to you, like, get in there, and then we did a tackling drill. And to be honest, I'd be a bit like Bambi on ice. You know, you were going to become one of the best midfielders in Ireland, by if not the best at times. But just in that tackling drill, you were still probably, as you were saying, Neil, was that because of your size, it was later for you to happen in terms of filling out and that? And then over time, like, you get into the Donegal team and was in and out. But just, obviously, you captained the National League in 2007, very proud moment for you, which was great. It was a great time in Donegal. Of course, we put so much on that. We bombed in the championship. And then we had those years under John Joe and that, I'm sure, Neil, where you thought, you know, is this ever going to happen? Is it just going down and downhill? And then, of course, 2011... everything changed. And I'm just thinking back to 2011, personally for you, Neil, you weren't in the team under Jim, you weren't in the starting 15 as such, you know, you certainly not the way you were obviously in 2012. What was happening around that time?
Well, listen, you'd piles of good midfielders too that were, like, you know, Kavanagh and Raff and Ryan Bradley was there, and Toy and all playing around the middle and that, like. And it was just, I remember the two boys were kind of carrying Knox, Kavanagh and Rafferty, like, in 11 before the final against Derry, and just kind of training with the head down and training hard enough. I'd come on, I think, in the quarter final against Kavanagh. But, you know, there were two tight boys to get on ahead of too, like, you know.
Were they the midfield partner that year?
They were, aye.
It's hard to remember all the years. Yeah. So Rafferty,
they were and playing good stuff too. But I know, I think Rory made an ankle injury and Raff maybe a groin or something, but I know they weren't training fully a wild lot before the game and stuff and that. And just got the shout against Derry that day and stuff. And then got taken off at half time then against Kildare in that game in 11, like, but came on again in injury time or in extra time. But I think, well, for me, the way I look at it, then in 11, then we went obviously in the run of the championship and won the championship and then played a few games in Ulster. normally, actually, after the Dublin match, I may not remember the semi-final, the low-scoring one. Like, you kind of normally you'd go maybe and go out with the boys for a couple of days, and I think maybe I went on the Sunday and Monday. But after that, you know, I was, couldn't wait to actually get training for Glenswally again. You know, because when you hadn't played all the time, you were mad to get playing. Then, yes. You know, and I remember after the we finished in Ulster, then and you know that's how you normally take a wee break. But I remember thinking to myself now that you know. You knew, and just knew the team was going places, and from being a starter like before that in the years previous, you know, you know nobody wants to be like everybody wants to start. So I remember in 11, like I mean, I didn't even take a break myself, and I trained away, and I got out the mountain bike and was up and down the hills and just getting fit and stuff. And I think that kind of pre season before we started pre season kind of helped me, and then I could play in the league and just.
Well, I suppose it's like a lot of things, Bren. You know, Jim had a thing in his mind of what he wanted, and he probably thought this is the way I'm going to go, and maybe Neil wasn't part of that plan. But things develop, and you know, managers make mistakes, and they see that you know he's going to become he became invaluable to the team, and someone, Jesus, that you know, an all-star, that someone that we couldn't do without, and probably haven't replaced you since. But it's funny the way it goes. You know, managers can come in with
I think I remember having a conversation with him and Rory and at training one night, like, and. I think that kind of just about the different things that he wanted me to work on, like, and as I say, you know, you want to be playing, like, and that's what you train hard for, and I suppose I kind of just tried to kind of do them things and that, you know, and
but you know, just to go back, Brendan, sorry, you know, to go back to the early days, you were saying when he first came up with the county, it must have been 2003 because McAnuff was manager, and I remember it well, Neil, because we were all together, we were up and down the road, but we were in Balbuffet probably pre-championship. It was in warm evenings in Balbuffet playing, and I was in the half forward and maybe the full forward, and you used to be maybe in full forward, and you were flying at the time, and John Gilday and Stephen McDermott were the two midfielders, and any time Neil would go out to midfield, like, he would catch the ball, and I had it in my head, and I used to say to you that I think McAnuff was afraid to play you at midfield in training sessions because he'd have to put you on the team, you were playing that well, and he didn't want to take that risk. And he used to put you into the forwards where you were not near as effective. But maybe now, like, McAnuff was a wily old campaigner, and maybe he knew what he was at. But I used to remember at the time, so that, how that man is not playing midfield, even in the practice games.
Because he needed men to fight spawn. That's, as I say, that's something all my time playing. There was very few, even when John was about then. Even Paul McMonagall was one of the few boys that probably had that out-and-out physical ability to go up and catch balls. Because the likes of Gilday or Jim McGinnis, they just hadn't got that height. Essential enough to really get up there and everything. Was the time still good there in 2011? McGinnis didn't break up the back of the bus.
No.
So we used to be down the back of the bus, big deal over there. Wee Neil, which is Neil McGee. He's not that small, but he was wee Neil and Franny. And it's funny, like, the crack we used to have down the back of the bus, Toy was down there with all his sense in that. And you had certain guys in, it was funny on the bus, the dynamic. A lot of boys were in the headphones, you know, Cass and Kavanagh. These boys would be all minding their own business. We'd be acting the Egypt down the back, trying to annoy people on the bus and that. But as things got very serious around Donegal, did the crack, was there still an element of fun there as the training really went up?
No, there was still that element of fun. Like, it was, the training was hard, and especially in Jim's time, there was... Like, I remember on Saturday, you had the training, then you maybe meetings and stuff, and then you went home about 3 o'clock or whatever, and you kind of nearly lay on the sofa for the rest of the day, because first you had to, obviously you had to prepare for the next day, but you were that tired from it. But no, like, the crack down the back was still the same. Like, and when you train hard, you kind of, you know, when you, everybody's training hard, and you kind of, you have that kind of bond there and stuff. And no, like, I mean, it changed then from, everybody, it was all cards then, playing 25, like, you know, and they still play that for 25, but then they end up, you had about 12 or 13 boys, and the funny thing, and it's so childish, but what we used to do then is, I say there was 12 looking to get in, you only 8 could play, like, and what you used to do then, so 4 had to step out, so you had the deck upside or down, and you had to pull out, so whoever got the 4 lowest cards, like, and any time, say, you pull out a 2 or a 3, like, there's this big roar going up. It was so childish. But that was nearly more crack than the carriage.
But there's so much time, you see, on buses and away here and there, that any crack does tend to be a bit childish. What can you do? I suppose that's what keeps us young.
You were also fondly of making an odd, dodgy phone call to a man pretending to be a reporter from the Irish News or some of that there. It used to be good crack.
Some crack. Yeah. Like, I mean, I remember one time, I think this was on the 21, so we rang... Ryan Aidan Sweeney over in Dunlow. He was a plumber, and rang him. Obviously, there were toilet blocks. Childish, but...
Toy too was kept. Toy actually rang McNiff while we were on the bus coming back.
That's right.
From
that's
a game.
Kenny Archer. And he asked, and McNiff was smart. Like, I remember that, and he asked him, "Where are you from, Kenny?" And Toy had a clue. And he said something like Down or something, and he said, "Oh, he's from Derry or something along that." Like, and no, McNiff was smart. That was a great track now.
So we're right up now to 2011, so we're going into 2012 season. This miracle season was about to unfold. And tell me, the fact that 2011 had gone for you, that were you, had you your mind set, right, I'm getting into this team? Did you think you were going to get into it, or what was your thoughts just going into that season?
Well, like, as I say, kind of like, in, you know, I would never, like, nobody kind of bigs himself up or anything, but I knew I was kind of training hard and I was fit, and I kind of, more so in my own head, I wanted to say to myself that, listen, I'll try and play, or try and do whatever Jim wants to, so that he, you know, has to kind of pick me, not, you know, that kind of way, and that, you know, it's different for the likes of, you know, Murphy and McFadden and Lacey and all, that they're just going to be guaranteed starters because they're just class players, like, but I remember then the McKenna Cup and games like that, like, you know the way some boys sit out and stuff now, like, I didn't mind playing if I was injury free. I used to like training and playing away, like, and playing away at the league then and stuff, and I think Raf was carrying an injury most of that year, and that kind of opened a slot there for it, like, because Raf was playing great stuff, like, for them years, you know, and I suppose the league then, I just can't even remember how the league went, to be honest with you. I think we made a... Did we beat Leash in the final in Division 2? That's right. And again, trained hard and stuff, like, and everybody was training hard, like, I remember, and it was just good training sessions, like, and you were fit, like, and...
But, Nate, I've seen some of them training, like, it was grueling and stuff, like, you were fitter than anyone, like, that was that mad stuff that Jim, everyone back, and then everyone bombing forward, like, it was phenomenal. You must have been, it's all right to say you've trained hard, but I'd say it was as hard as you've ever trained or ever will train.
Oh, it was, definitely, because... Again, I suppose the thing was, you could see, like, the way Jim and Rory was doing everything for you, and you could see that the team's going places, so nobody wanted to miss out. So if you were a half back or a midfielder or a forward, you didn't want to be sitting the subs, you wanted to be playing, like. So I remember going into the championship that year and stuff, that, you know, there was great, I suppose, there was great belief, I would say, in the team and stuff, and championship came around then, and when we got to the final against Down, actually, we played Kilcar in a league match maybe a couple of weeks, maybe 2 weeks before it. I actually went over my ankle, over on Towny, and ankle swole out and stuff like that. So I actually missed Ulster final 2012, you know, but we had Kerry in the quarter final and came on at half time and it, like, and I think, well, that day against Down, like, you know, in the Ulster final now, we were fit, like, in, you know, we kind of put up a big score against them, but I think I would say the Kerry match then, whenever we kind of, you know, beat them, like, it was a big game at Croke Park, like, you know, and
Cork, and of course, then, which was an unbelievable game for you.
Probably your best ever,
personally.
Again, I suppose, well, for me, I know if I scored, which never happened, like 6 or 7 points in the game, I would get no real enjoyment out of it, like, but if I caught 6 or 7 kickouts or a couple, I would get far more enjoyment out of that. Like, I loved that. Like, and even now, you know, going watching matches and stuff like that, or watching things, I love just the high catch and the feeling thing, and everybody's different. Like,
you mentioned the belief there, and just, it was the belief, kind of, a lot of people looking for matches, it was the belief kind of programmed, and you, or did it just come from, listen, you knew you were hard to beat, you were fit, you had a brilliant counter-attack system. Was there a constant kind of, like, almost psychological thing from team meetings and that about belief? Was there, like, videos? Was there, you know, we a lot of people, as I say, not we're all Donegal guys, not that we're from the outside, but outside the camp, there was kind of this thing as if it was almost, you know, bred into you every night that this is going to happen. Was that the sense of things going, or was it more just normal stuff that was happening, or was there anything extra?
Listen, I suppose, I mean, through that, we probably, probably before that, you know, we probably, it's only after, say, maybe Jim and Rory, when we trained, that do them grueling sessions, that we thought maybe we were training for the years previous, you know, we thought as players we were training hard, but we probably weren't, you know. But after that, when you do like a 2.5 hour session with 30 other fellows, like, I think that kind of instills a lot of belief. And, you know, when you're fit and stuff like that, then I suppose a lot of it came from Jim and Rory just being there, having everything, you know, laid out, you know, everything covered and whatnot. Like, it was just, it was...
Adam Spear's input.
Spear was the strength. And actually, the gym sessions, you know, some guys love the gym, some don't. Like, I mean, it's hugely beneficial and you have to do it and stuff. But I remember actually for building team morale and stuff as well, like, we used to go to Spear's gym, and the time we had the one up the mountaintop there, it was a good big setting upstairs in the big building up there. And do you know this? We used to go down to Max Mason for the breakfast after, and that was good old crack. You know, McFadden and Frank and Murphy and Amy McGee was in the town at the time, and Toy and that, and Kevin. And do you know this? You had good old crack, and who was lifting what and slagging, and boys, you know, we used to watch away Kevin, like, and again, wild childish stuff, like, but he'd be, say it was 4 sets of 12 or something, like, and so we'd be over doing our exercise, he'd be doing his, like, and you know, he'd be in his 4th set or whatever, like, and he'd do about 8, like, and then he'd stop, like, and, we'd be pointing this out to Spear and all kinds of stuff, but, I mean, you know, it was great crack, like, and I remember that time, you know, I remember the training, you know, the training was tough and all, but I remember then, say, when you finished the training, this is in the championship, when you finished the training, say, on a Thursday night, the Thursday night training was a good one, everybody looked forward to it, because wasn't too intense, like, you need a bit of shooting and tactical stuff and all that, you know. But see, getting on the bus then on a Saturday, and that, if you're heading to see the games in Crow Park or whatever, like, or we used to stay in the Steve Russell, I remember just being fascinated by the team, the tactics and the things the boys set out. And, you know, every game was different, you know, wondering, like, right, who's he going to put Mark and who and stuff like that, you know. And it was just kind of, it was...
Well, it was revolutionary, and the whole, we'd never seen anything like it before in GAA, and Jim was the first man to do it, and you were the first team, so it was fascinating for everyone, and to be on the inside, it must have been...
Like, the thing there, you know, where you were saying about the training camps and stuff and all, like, and, you know, chatting earlier and that about, like, as a squad and all, like, I used to see the week before the championship, you know, the game, like, if you were heading away to Johnstown or you're heading to Loch Aaron, we used to go up there a lot, like, and see when you got the bus, say, on a Friday or Thursday evening, and you had Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that was just, you brought your gear bag, and that was it. You were in that environment for a couple of days, like, and you were...
Jesus, cost up county some money, too, when you think back on it.
Well, here we go with the cash again, my God. Neil, I suppose, you know, after that brilliant Cork performance, we're in the final with Mayo, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, Mayo, but having seen what we'd seen the last couple of seasons, you know, and seen how Mayo play and seen how no one had really tried to counteract our style, you know. In fairness, you know, Antrim in the very first game under Baker tried to do what we did. And remember that horrible game in Balvafay 2011, first championship game? We just, Mark McHugh got the goal, remember? Like, there was nothing in it up into that. I think after that, particularly 2012, no team tried to take us on. There was a lot of kind of managers who'd been around a while, and they were all, we're going to play our own game against this system. And then you play your own game against a counter-attack system, you're going to be beat, particularly if it's a good team, as we were. So we get into the final against Mayo, as much as, you know, I just couldn't see us being beat. And then we had that whirlwind start, and I was just wondering, how did you feel after that start? Because I think people talk about Mayo coming back into the game then. I wonder, did we stop playing? Because it just looked so easy for us in the early stages.
Well, you're kind of in the middle of it, and you're not really, you know, you see how you feel about the start. You don't really think too much on it. Like, you're happy that the goals are going in. But at the same time, it was probably, compared to the two games previous and that, like, it's probably our worst. Or the performance out of them, like, I mean, the start was great, like, I suppose in the second half we kind of kept them maybe at 3 or 4 points, but massive start, and I think we were only 3 points in it at half time. Like, they come back and got a couple of good scores and that, you know, and Jim and that fairly give it this at half time, because, you know, we're letting them back in, like, you know, you're 7 points up and then you brought it back to 3, like, and, like, I mean, Lee Keegan hits one, a big high one, like, and, you know, it just dropped over the bar. It drops on, like, Seamus O'Shea actually had you're actually watching the game back there, times there at Christmas, and you'd be thinking, Seamus O'Shea had a good chance for a goal. Like, uh-huh. And after he brings it back to a point, then they won the next kicker. It's all there to play for. But listen, the relief after that, like, was, people on about the Cork match and that, about, you know, it was a great Donegal performance and stuff, but the best game in a way was definitely the final.
You got a point in the final, didn't you? The second half.
You want to talk us through it?
Well,
Lacey put you through, did he?
No, it was. It was.
I seen it recently in the Air Sports, just beyond there.
Give it to Frank. I think he was cornerback. Anthony Thompson was ahead of him. He was the halfback. Like, and I just seen that you, Anthony, give it, and then Frank, then being such a smart player, you kind of pulled Killian O'Connor back a little bit to get away from him. Sneaked in then, and Frank, it was just come off his shoulder. Like, and I could was only about 45, 46 yards out.
you were about 21 out, and you just tapped it over,
Like, you know, but listen, as I say.
Nice to score points in an All-Ireland final. It must be brilliant.
And huge, Neil, I mean, the celebrations coming back to Donegal, coming back to Glen Swilly, just moments that are
brilliant. Like, I mean, I remember 2006 going up, you know, hardly ever thinking these things now until you're chatting about them. But I remember going up to the final that year in 06, me and McFadden. And, you know, we'd got to a quarter final that time, Cork beat us by a point. And I remember watching that game, Kerry Mayo, and you're thinking,
it was over after 10 minutes.
But we were so far, like, we thought go to quarter final, but so far away. Like, and then to actually be there and winning it then in 2012 was just brilliant. Like, and the whole week was just brilliant. Loved about, like, you're on with the bus, like, the crack on the bus that time was unreal. Like, and then the plan was to come to Letterkenny on the Glen Swilly on the Tuesday, but we were. Just there was that big of crowds in all the areas that were good delayed, and we had Letterkenny, and then it ended up, it was the Thursday, we came back to Glen Swilly now, and I know it was very special. Like,
it was a mighty time, such a mighty time that you basically took 2013 off, and it took you back to 2014, and they come back as a force that you were. Listen, we'll let you away with that, because it was such a special time, 2012, the buzz around the county was unbelievable, Neil, and what it done then, I think, for young players at that time, you've seen a lift from our underage through, because it created such a buzz, and that's what the big counties have as well, because they're always at the top. Every young man wants to play, and that's GA's number one, and he's created that as well. 2013, as I say, Mayo got a bit of a revenge on us in a quarter final or whatever, and then we're back to 2014 again. And what was the vibe, what was the message 2014 at the start of the season? Was it, you know, this get back? Was it All-Ireland? Was it, listen, this one and Ulster and see what happens? Was there any kind of mentality from the squad or from Jim coming in? Rory had stepped away at the stage.
For 14, I suppose it was just, I mean, that was kind of Jim's fourth year, and like, I would say there was a kind of realisation maybe within the squad that, listen, like, there's maybe seven or eight, I don't know, maybe the older players that were kind of in their 30s at that stage, and you know, we didn't know how long Jim was going to stay for too, but I think in 14, I think we probably started pre-season probably middle and early too, you know, and I think the main aim at the start, you know, was Monaghan had beat us fairly well in the Ulster final in 13, and we, you know, I think the team wasn't fit. I mean, we were a couple of knocks here and there and that, and no disrespect to Monaghan, they were the far the better team on the day in 13, like, but I suppose we wanted to get back and wanted to win Ulster again, and everybody was, you know, would kind of boys got back and fit, and there were a couple of the younger boys, McNeillis and Ryan McHugh, had come into the squad, like, and it was just kind of, I would think maybe a wee bit more of the fact that, you know, when a lot of older boys were, as I say, 31, maybe 32, and hadn't had long left, and then played well against Monaghan in that Ulster final, like, and like, that's a big thing, like, they won the Ulster final. Like,
it was tough one then, and just getting back again, I suppose, from the tactics perspective in 2012, big jump then to 2014, because everybody was getting streetwise around tactics, and games were becoming tough. Now, you talk about that Monaghan game, there's never going to be much in it. Then it was the Armagh game, they tactically set up exactly like us too. That was a great game, it really went down the wire, because the Dubs were on the horizon, and everybody was almost like talking over it. I know myself, some of the media asked me about it, and I remember Raymond McGee complaining that I had spoken about it, but they had asked me the question about playing the Dubs, you know, and we still had to play Armagh, which was very disrespectful to Armagh. And I remember that game was in the melting pot, and a couple of the press, I was up doing the commentary at the game, a couple of boys were looking at me and saying, you're going to be a bar if Armagh beat Donegal after this year. But I was saying, I had to answer the question, I've no point in me doing this work unless you answer questions, you know. But that game came right down to the wire. And I guess that's the thing about the tactics and things about 2012, you know, the system that we had was just going to be overpower even the better teams in the country. Now it was coming down to the real finer points of the game. And I think, you know, when we got into the final then with Kerry, even though they had played a fairly open system against Mayo in the game and the replay just a few weeks previous, they went double sweepers and went like us, and obviously really detailed Murphy as well, and really became a game that was played as our tactics were, and that's why it came down to the small margins of game. But what was your feeling about going into that final?
The Armagh game was a battle, that game, to go through that there, and then the Dublin game, we got them gold. They could have, Papa saved from, I think it was Jeremy Connolly, could have put them 194 points up, and it would have been hard to come back from that. But, you know, we got the goal from Ryan McHugh before half time, and then kind of, that was a good game, and I don't actually know what happened in the final in it. You know, we should have been, you know, because we trained not so bad and we're in good enough shape. But normally in the games we had our third quarter, we had kind of,
yeah,
scored a good bit, maybe, you know, after half time and that. But I think, you know, we were 1 point up, I think, but after that we never really got ahead much off Kerry. It's a disappointing one.
Hayden O'Mahony just lay at Murphy the whole game and two men on him, and that was a big, but no, we never got going. And
sorry, you took me back to semi. I didn't mean to jump past Dublin. I mean, that was one of the most memorable performances we've ever seen. It felt like it all Ireland in the days. I was kind of in mind going through the different games there, but that, just taking it back actually, and thanks for going through a bit of it, because that was like the David and Goliath stuff, you know. And we were saying before the game that if Dublin's plan stops working, this was the point, listen, was we spoke about, if Dublin's plan stops working, then they'll start to crack. Whereas for us, we just keep grinding it. Even though we went behind, as you said, in the first half, they were all over us, but no one was panicking. And I think that's the key to that system. You know you have a game plan, you keep playing it. Whereas once a Dublin team, they didn't have no plan. But in many ways, we created then this brilliant, unstoppable team that's come out of that since. But yeah, the wave of emotion around that semi-final, John, I don't know about you, it was every bit as strong as the All-Ireland final a couple of years before. It was just amazing. Mm-hmm. The whole place, I remember being around Dublin that night, mm-hmm. and all, there was such emotion around. It was fantastic. Brilliant to be involved in that.
It was, you know, but it's probably the one game that I actually hardly ever chat about because of the fact that we lost the final.
Exactly. It's one of the biggest tragedies. You know, it takes all the good, it doesn't take the goodness out of it, because you said, but it does, how we lost that final to Kerry, just it takes
but
the shine off
for
that.
Kerry, no matter what, that, in my opinion, the best team always wins on the day. And Kerry were the best team in the day. And
not by much,
that.
Neil. You look at it, I always say, you slag the Kerry once on Twitter and have a go at them. They scored 2-9 on a dry day in Croke Park and all that in Finn. 2-9, they got 11 scores. Do you know what I mean? Now, I know we didn't play, we got 12. But, only for Pappas, you can't, that's one of them things, a mistake. It wasn't a good Kerry team, boys. It wasn't a good Kerry team.
I think the goals killed us, right? The first one was an attempted shot that's half blocked that landed in Deganey, right? And he was against McGrath, bigger man. And Kerry had looked to isolate them too. That was a word coming up from Kerry before that. Obviously, Durkin, the second goal, you can't legislate for that. And then you think about McFadden's off the butt of the post, to equalise in the last throw of the dice. I always think if we had got Kerry again, there's no way we would have let Michael be shackled like that there. We would have got him freer as well, because he's obviously the man makes us tick so much. So Kerry did what they needed to do. They won on the day. And I agree with you, Neil. I think they just slightly edged it.
Oh, possibly on the day, but we didn't play near what we were. It was such a come down from the Dublin game. That was the disappointing thing. But listen, that's football.
That's if McFadden had that and not hit the post, we would have took it. I took a draw, definitely.
Yeah. Oh,
but,
absolutely.
And well, looking since we probably didn't deserve it, that's football, or we still would have took it,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, and you're starting to get an odd creak in the body then, Neil, is the ankles and back?
Just the back end, I suppose, 15, and we played with Rory in that, and we had gone not so bad and probably should have won Ulster that year again, but we didn't, and then 16... we should have probably won Ulster again, but listen, Monaghan and Tyrone deserved it both on the day then, because as I say, the best team in my opinion always wins, and listen, most teams, whenever they get beat, I know they kind of say that, we didn't play well, but listen,
that horrible 16 final at 12-10, that was a tough one to watch.
Just the kind of the body and the back and that sort of thing, but a bother, and it's kind of you know, it takes longer to recover and different things like that, you know, and then I kind of knew then in 16 I didn't play, I don't get played in the championship at all, I think. Last game I played was against Roscommon out in O'Donnell Park, another defeat in O'Donnell Park. played Roscommon, and I remember I was marking one of the Daly brothers, like, and he scored 3 points off me, and I was taken off at half time. Like, that's the last time I played for Donegal, like, and.
And did you at the time? Did you know it was up? Were you happy enough for leaving, or did you know, was it a bit of a thing where a lot of players, you know, when they have to retire, you know, have fears of doing that? I know you're going to still play club and that, but was it a thing where you thought, right, time's up, time to move on, or was it something that you didn't want to end?
Oh, you obviously didn't want it to end. Like, and I mean, since kind of stopped playing, like, and once I say this is a massive commitment and stuff, and you know, you must be relieved and glad, and I'd be like, nah. You know, if I was 20 again, I would do the exact same thing again. Like, and in my opinion, it's not a massive commitment or a massive thing, because you have to want to do it. Like, and if you want to do it, you don't mind. Like, nothing else can. And I like that. Like, nothing else really came into play. You just everything focus. Around your day was focused on your training, on your gym, and your what, and your games. Like, and no, I dislocated the shoulder again in 16, and you know, I kind of knew then, and the back was even more. I knew then that listen. The time, and funny, we went on a run then with Glenswally and won the championship, and I kind of, you know, I probably thought maybe I'll give it another rattle, because I wanted then to kind of prove, after not playing much in 16, I wanted to try and see if I could prove that I could get back to that level again. But no, you just know, like, you just, I was up to training, I remember, in Convoy, and no, I was doing there, wasn't even taking part in the training, doing the runs up beside, and I remember meeting Rory one day, and he says, how are you getting on one night, like, and it was around February time, and I says, you know, this is, I can't see it, like, you know, and he says, well, listen, don't do an ass now, listen, I kind of think it was fairly made up, and he says, I'll give you a ring in the morning, and funny, he rang, and we just chatted, and just, I says, listen, hey, to be honest, and I suppose it wasn't I wouldn't say it was a relief as such, like, but you kind of, you know, I just knew then I wasn't going to get up to that level again, but I was glad I kind of tried for a month or two, but.
You have no regrets.
No, you'd still have, like, I would still play away if the body was able, like, you know, but it's great to be part of, and you and the crack and stuff, and the likes of Frank and Leo stepping away there now, like, that they're going to miss it now, like, you know, and the younger boys coming in then too, like, it was
such an interest, Gray, you know, when you think about coming late to the game and all that you've seen in the mad days, you know, obviously a couple of speed wobbles in there with John Joe and what he called MacGyver.
Aye.
Well, Brian Keane Bonner for that, they led you astray.
But,
but you know, then they see both sides of it, you know, and even though obviously I was in the pre-side of McGuinness coming, like, I started playing around about 2007, you know, after you lifted that trophy for me. And, you know, I still loved the fact that being so tight to all you guys, that you've seen that other side of it where... We were never professional enough to beat the likes of Armagh or Tyrone, not regularly anyway, and not through having a system in place. They started to get systems. We were way off that, and as you were saying, going watching the All-Ireland 2006, but Jim Nane put her system way above anything that they had, you know. So, absolutely brilliant career. I know you're involved in Big Neil Sports and Leisure. I'm going to rename this place, say, it's Murphy Man's. I hope he's not taking all the cash, eh?
No, we're kind of... We deal there now,
partnership.
Pay all to the taxman. Don't give us too much. What about What about the sheepdog trails? That's your new sport at leisure now.
Well, not too bad. I go not too bad. There's one there yesterday. No, Saturday there.
So. I see. You like it?
Going well. Going not so bad. Now, so.
Different setup,
but still again, like, you know, you kind of
competitive.
You need that competitive, like, in. You know what's? I think you know anybody that's playing, you know, at a high level there, you know. I think the competitiveness is kind of the one thing. I definitely missed that there kind of thing with the football as competing against the top midfielders, like, you know, and like you kind of that kind of thing, and you get a wee bit of that competitiveness.
So now you're competitive against the dog men of Fintown or Glencolm Kilder or Ardra or who's the big shot all over Ireland?
Aye, all over Donegal, right. And then like with the thing and also the last day, you know, but. Again, it's a competitive thing, like, I've been out there, like, and, you know, it was no different even to the games of 25. We played in the back of the bus. You were mad, you won, like, and I think you need that, like, and we had a lot of boys in that squad that were mad, they won as well.
My last question, because I have to go, whatever about you, whatever about Big Neil, but Tell me this, Neil, I used to always laugh when I used to see you doing it and say, where did he ever get that from? Solo with the left and then kick it onto Murphy with the right. You used to love the solo with the left and then you would kick it with the right.
It was, it just kind of, I don't know, it just came, but it was actually, I would have the ball in the right hand and the left. It was right. Actually going against everything you were taught, you know, but I think it kind of, especially if you were being tackled, because it kind of, you're able to get away quicker or something, I used to set him up for a bounce a wee bit better. And
it's been an absolutely brilliant interview from top to bottom between football and sheepdogs and 25s and what have you. Neil, listen, thanks so much for coming up.
All right, great. Thanks for having me on.
Great talking to you. So listen, that's a wrap from the DL Debate. I want to thank Daniel Brennan for producing here along with Oisin and Canis and the great John Harnan here. Con and Damien on the phone too, and you know, you do a lot of things in the GA and you meet a lot of great people, but what fantastic guests we've had on this week. Next week, of course, we'll be getting feedback from the camps around the Dublin Donegal match with some special guests lined up, so tuned in next Monday again from 7 p.m. That's the DL Debate on HighlandRadio.com.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's Kitchen. And there's free admission entertainment every weekend.